So I'm really glad to welcome everybody today. It's going to be an exciting couple of years, I think, especially in this subject area and this committee, and really looking forward to working with all of you, those of you I've worked with before and those of you that I have not. So welcome. Before we get started with member introductions, I just would like to take a moment to mark the passing of one of our dear friends here in the legislature. And I just think it's appropriate to begin our year talking a little bit about our friend Eric Dick, who passed away just in this past week. I think many of you probably knew Eric Dick. He was a healthcare lobbyist. He worked a lot with the Minnesota Medical Association and with some other medical organizations, and has been around the legislature for a long time and is somebody that I personally was very fond of. And I think anyone who worked with him had to really be fond of him because he was just a very dear person. I would like to read a little bit about Eric, information I got from the Minnesota Medical Association. And then I would just like to invite other members, if you choose to say a word or two about Eric. And then we will just have a moment of silence before we move on to our other business. So here, this is from the MMA. Eric Dick was not only a good colleague and lobbyist, he was a better friend. We had the pleasure and honor of working with Eric at the MMA for many years. Prior to that, he was a committee administrator for the Senate Judiciary Committee and worked for Redmond and Associates. He also worked for 10 years for Congressman Ron Kind of Wisconsin. Eric had a great love of politics and the legislature. Every year, he looked forward to the start of session and the chance to promote what he believed was good public policy. It showed in his work. He also had a welcoming heart and worked to include all, especially those who were new to this strange field of lobbying. In addition to his professional work, Eric was an animal lover who cherished two dogs, loved to travel, loved live music, especially the band Phish, and he loved anything related to Wisconsin sports, especially his Green Bay Packers, of which he was one of many thousand owners. Eric grew up outside of Milwaukee and graduated from the University of Wisconsin La Crosse. He's survived by his sister Amy and his dogs Piper and Jersey. So, members, with that, I would give, if you would like to say anything about Eric as we get started, I would invite you to do that. And I think Representative Freiberg wants to say something. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. Yeah, the news about Eric's passing came as just a shock out of nowhere. He was somebody I worked with extensively on issues related to immunization and was just always a pleasure to work with him. He was unfailingly kind and thoughtful, and just really, as the lobbying profession, kind of like the lawyer profession or the politician profession, tends to get categorized in very negative terms. Sometimes it's warranted, but certainly it was totally the opposite in the case of Eric. I mean, he was, he represented, I think, the finest of what a person can be as a lobbyist. Just a very knowledgeable person, willing to work with legislators. Always kind of seemed to have a positive outlook, not cynical about the process or the people involved in any way. And it really won't be the same working on some of the issues I've worked on without him being there.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Representative Morrison.
Thanks, Chair Liebling. Boy, Eric Dick was one of those people that everyone liked and admired. He was a consummate professional and excellent at his job of advocating for patients and providers at the Minnesota Legislature. He and his colleague, Dave Renner, became good friends and mentors in some ways to me. and during my first term in the legislature, it was always a pleasure to work with him. He and I arrived at a truce on our fervid love of, in my case, the Minnesota Vikings, and in his case, the Green Bay Packers. We agreed to disagree on that, and I kind of wonder if the Packers might bring it all the way home for him this year. I just want to offer my deepest sympathies to his family and to the huge community of his friends who grieve his loss deeply. He will be very missed.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that, Representative Morrison. Is there anybody else that wants to say anything about Eric Dick? I'm not seeing anybody else. So, all right. Well, members, thank you. Let's just take a moment of silence here to remember Eric Dick. Thank you, members. And I just have to say, it's lovely to see across the, we are separated probably by many miles right now, although we're all here together virtually, but you know, our thoughts and our prayers kind of come together, and that's a very lovely thing. Thank you so much for that. So with that, we are going to now turn to member introductions and introductions of our staff. So what I'd like to do, and we want to move fairly quickly through this, so we're not going to have time to for a lot of speeches here, but well, let me first have the staff introduce themselves. So starting with Patrick McQuillan, if you could, Patrick, just tell folks your role and introduce yourself.
Sure. So my name is Patrick McQuillan, and I am the committee administrator for the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Previously, I worked with Representative Liebling as our committee administrator for the HHS Finance Division last cycle.
Okay, thank you. And let's see. I'm going to hold off on House Research for a moment. Krista Niedernhofer, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, if you would.
Hi, I'm Krista. I'm Representative Liebling's legislative assistant and the committee legislative assistant.
Okay, thank you very much. And let's see, we have partisan staff in addition to nonpartisan staff. So let's go to them next. And let's see, who is the Republican partisan staff? Oh, Jeremiah, I see you there. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, Jeremiah Wingstead. I'm the Republican researcher for Health and Human Services Committees.
Thank you. And Joe?
I'm Joe Durheim, and I am the DFL caucus researcher for the committee.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And let's see, I know we're gonna have our nonpartisan House research staff are gonna introduce themselves in a moment. Let's go to Doug Berg. Doug?
Hi, I'm Doug Berg. I'm the finance analyst for the Human Services Committees, and I work closely with the HRD people. Actually, we're all housed together now. Since the last session, we're all in one big happy office suite, although we're not quite one office yet.
Okay, great. That's good to know, because I know you've been holed up in kind of a little cubbyhole for quite a few years before this, so I'm glad to hear that. Okay, and then we have also our nonpartisan House staff who are going to give us our presentation today, so I'm going to let them be introduced when we get to their presentations. So let's go to the members now. So let's go to Representative Hewitt, who is the vice chair of this committee.
Thank you, Chair Liebling, and welcome, members. I'm looking forward to serving with you on this committee. Many of you know just briefly that I've been involved in EMS for over 30 years, so I'm bringing that lens, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm also going to be reaching out to every one of you to set up a quick introduction with each of you just to go forward, and I feel my job is to make sure that we keep the committee moving forward, and that's kind of where I'm going to be on that. So looking forward to our meeting, and welcome to the committee.
Great, and thank you very much. And Representative Schumacher, who's the Republican lead on the committee? Is Representative Schumacher here? I don't see him. Okay. Okay, well, if he hops in here a little bit later, we'll get him. Okay. All right, so let's see. Ms. Niedernhofer, you have the list of members, I hope, because and she is taking, she will be taking the attendance. So Krista, if you could kind of call members in order, I think that would be great so that I don't miss anybody. Could you do that?
Yes.
And members, if you could just, you know, just to give a really brief introduction, who you are and maybe why you're interested in the work of this committee.
Ackland.
Hi, I'm Susan Ackland, freshman House of Representatives. My background is in nursing. I've been a registered nurse for 40 years. My husband also is in medicine. He's a family practice physician. And so I'm looking forward to being on this committee and learning a lot more than I know right now about just the process and policy of healthcare.
Great, welcome.
Thank you.
Backer.
Yeah, hi, I'm Jeff Backer from Browns Valley, Minnesota, which is border South Dakota. Like our vice chair, I have served as he served as a paramedic. I've served 25 years as an EMT volunteer, EMT for not just our community, for actually two counties, two states. We go into South Dakota, and we do a lot of work for the Sisseton-Wahpeton tribe. So that is my interest, and I have an interest. So, but that's where my interest is came as a with health and human service. But this year we're health only, which is the same thing, you know, pretty much the same. So thank you.
Thank you.
Bonner.
Hello, this is Representative Kristen Bonner from Maple Grove and Osseo. It's good to be with you here today. I will tell you that I come to this with an interesting lens. I grew up the daughter of a nurse, a pharmacist next door. My sister is a type 1 diabetic, and my grandfather was one of the leading members of the Bloomington Rescue Squad. I have a diverse background in healthcare, from medical records and authorizing drugs for a living, to working for the largest healthcare company in the country, as well as a PBM on the IT side, of course, but working primarily to prevent things like healthcare readmissions and things like that. But the main reason I'm passionate about this particular topic is that I just think that we need to work on how we make healthcare more accessible and affordable for everyday families, and how we make the system actually work for real families. And that is the part that I look forward to most.
Thank you.
Bierman.
Thank you. Robert Bierman, District 57A, small business owner. You know, in the House only one term thus far, so this is my second term and my second opportunity to be on this committee. I'm very interested in, as Kristen just mentioned, some of the same issues, the high cost of health care, the affordability, and the accessibility. So glad to be here and looking forward to working with all of you.
Thank you.
Bolden.
We can't hear you, Representative Bolden. No, we're not hearing you. Should we go to the next person and we'll come right back to you?
Amen.
Good afternoon, Chair Liebling and committee members, my name is Representative Lisa Damon. I serve the area of District 13A, which is a portion of Stearns County, right in the central part of our state. Very excited to be here and be a part of this committee. As far as how health affects all of us across the state, our different communities and different people in the communities, definite interest of mine is also dental care and also how it affects especially greater Minnesota. So looking forward to working with each of you and happy to be here.
Thank you. Representative Bolden, let's try you again. Can we do it? No. We're not getting anything. Okay, we'll move on. Okay, after
Freiberg.
Freiberg, okay.
Hi, I'm Mike Freiberg. I represent all or parts of Crystal, Golden Valley, New Hope, and Robbinsdale from District 45B. Excited to be on this committee. I've been on the Health Policy Committee before, but I don't know that I've actually been on the Health Finance Committee. I am chairing the Preventive Health Policy Division this term also, so look forward to a close relationship between the division I'm chairing as well as this committee. When I'm not in the legislature, I'm an attorney working on public health issues, so very interested in the subject matter of this committee and looking forward to working with all of you as a member of it.
Thank you.
Next on the list is Grunhagen, but he's excused today.
Okay.
So next is Keel.
Good afternoon. I was going to say good morning. Good afternoon. Hi, I'm Deb Keel and representative up in District 1B. So I serve in the northwest corner of Minnesota. I border North Dakota quite a bit. I actually live about 80 miles from the Canadian border. And I'm in my sixth term and have been pleased to serve in Health and Human Services, a committee, at least three terms now. And in my other world, I am a farmer transitioning into going from being the parents, the owners, to our son is now transitioning into taking over the farm. So my interest in Health and Human Services in general is I've spent considerable amount of time taking care of family members at the end of life, as well as other things that they might need, taking care of health issues, making sure that their needs, like a personal care tender attendant sometimes. So I'll volunteer, but anyway, look forward to working with you, Chair Liebling, and the rest of the team.
Thank you.
Morrison.
Good afternoon, Kelly Morrison. I represent District 33B, which includes communities in the Lake Minnetonka area in the western suburbs of Minneapolis. I've been a practicing OBGYN for almost 20 years. So this committee is near and dear to my professional work and my heart. And I'm excited to be part of the committee and looking forward to the work that we're going to do together. Thanks.
Thank you.
Munson.
Representative Jeremy Munson, and this is my second term on the Health and Human Services Finance or the Health Finance Policy or the Finance Committee to change this year. My first term I was in the Policy Committee, and it was a little frustrating. We didn't get to talk about costs, and then last term on the Finance Committee, we didn't get to talk about policy. So I'm super excited that we get to talk about both in one committee. I think it'll be a great session. So looking forward to it. My passions are on price transparency and the free markets and healthcare, reforming PBMs and such. So excited to learn how we can dig in and make Minnesota's healthcare system better. So look forward to it. And I look forward to serving with everyone in the committee.
Thank you.
Pryor.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Representative Lori Pryor. I represent Southern Minnetonka, Northern Eden Prairie. I'm the district that's just east of Dr. Morrison, Representative Morrison. And this is my first time on a health committee, so I'm really excited to be doing this work. And it really, you know, it starts with when I'm talking to constituents, every election that I've ever run, every conversation that I have in between elections as a representative, healthcare and the quality and the cost and the access and all of these issues are front and center on people's minds. So I'm glad to be able to do this work this time.
Thank you.
Kwan.
Hello, Madam Chair and members. I've got part of Olmsted, part of Dodge County, and I'm one of the three Olmsted residents on this committee, I think. And I've been on both committees multiple times or multiple terms. Haven't been on HHS for a while. For probably almost 10 years, I've been trying to progress pharmacogenomics. And that's basically getting the right medication and avoiding bad side effects by doing some testing. And I guess that's one of the specialties. In general, I grew up around Mayo, and I have classmates that are physicians at Mayo, friends. And so, we have a broad perspective, I think, in our, Tina and Liz, in what medicine can do for both communities and the state. And I look forward to progressing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome. Thank you, everyone. It's good to see you. I'm Liz Ryer. I'm the newly elected representative for District 51B in Eagan. My professional background has been in and around healthcare most of my career, especially on the payer side. So I'm interested in using that knowledge to be able to help address the disparities that we see in healthcare among groups, especially between white Minnesotans and Black Minnesotans, individuals, and communities of color. And also digging deep into the cost drivers that are influencing the challenge that we have for both individuals and businesses to be able to afford healthcare, looking at the payer side, the provider side, pharmaceutical. And then finally, looking at the needs of public health to make sure that we have a strong and robust system. I'm delighted to be here, and thank you.
Thank you.
Schultz.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Jen Schultz. I represent Duluth, District 7A. This is my fourth term, and I'll be chairing the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee, and I'm looking forward to working very closely with Chair Liebling to put together an HHS budget. I've been working in healthcare reform for more than 20 years, and my background, I have a PhD in health economics. And my goal is to make sure everyone has access to affordable healthcare and to point out why healthcare is unique and why there's so many market failures in healthcare.
Okay, thank you.
Wolgamon.
Good afternoon, Chair Liebling and members. My name is Dan Wolgamon, and I'm very proud to represent District 14B, which includes parts of St. Cloud, Minden Township, and Haven Township. I'm just a little bit to the east of Representative Damon's district. We're almost neighbors. And I'm really excited to be on this committee. This committee was my top choice because this pandemic has shown now more than ever how important it is that all Minnesotans, even Minnesotans who live in greater Minnesota, have access to quality, affordable health care. I'm very proud that the St. Cloud Hospital is in my district and the CentraCare healthcare system, which provides healthcare to over 800,000 Minnesotans per year and employs 14,000 people. I wanna make sure that we're passing laws and having a focus that puts their needs first and make sure that all Minnesotans, no matter where you're at in the state, are getting quality, affordable healthcare. It's an honor to be on this committee with you all, and I'm excited for the work that's ahead of us.
Great, well, thank you very much. Do we have anybody after W? I don't think we do. Okay.
No, we don't.
Okay. Madam Chair, can I try again?
Yeah, oh, yes, please. Go ahead.
Very good. Thank you for your patience with my technical issues here. So I am Liz Bolden, freshman member of the House representing District 25B, which is Northern Rochester. My professional background is in nursing. I've been a nurse for nearly 19 years. Most of that time was in the ICU and then moved on to education. And I currently lead a couple of teams of educators in mostly in critical care areas. And so I'm very excited to be here and get to work with all of you. Wanting to do the work to be sure that we optimize outcomes and access and quality of healthcare for all Minnesotans. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bolden. I'm glad you're able to work that out. So I should just say a word about myself as well for those of you who don't really know me. So I'm Tina Liebling. I represent part of Rochester. So Representative Quam and Representative Bolden and I are all from Olmsted County. So Olmsted County is very well represented on this committee. My district has the Mayo Clinic main campus in it. My background is I'm an attorney, but I also have a public health degree from a very long time ago. And I'm also married to a physician who's now retired. So that kind of explains some of my interest in healthcare. And, but I just do always like to say that even though Mayo Clinic is in my district, I don't represent Mayo Clinic. I represent the people who live in the district. And so, you know, of course, we are all interested in the businesses in the state and their views and all of that. But when it comes down to it, I always tell everyone, including Mayo Clinic, that I represent the people of the district. I'm very excited to hear all of you from all of you, especially those that I didn't know before. And really, I think we've got a great group here. I don't know why we're missing our Republican lead today, but we did have a conversation, and I'm very excited to be working with Representative Schumacher again as the Republican lead. He's really a great addition to this committee. So with that, I'm going to move right into now the presentation. We did send out the slides that we got from House Research, and I'm going to just say by way of introduction of them, I think that the order, the first up is going to be Randy Chun, but let me just say, and there he is, our nonpartisan House Research is a fabulous resource for all of us, and they are truly nonpartisan. They work with all of us. They give us all advice and help, and we are just so fortunate to have them. And Mr. Chun will tell us, I hope, how long he's been with with the House. I think it's longer than I've been around the House, I think, and just has a wealth of knowledge. And so I think what we'll do, I'll let Mr. Chun introduce himself and then start on the presentation. There's a ton of information that he's going to be presenting if you had a chance to look at the slides. I don't want anyone to think there's going to be a test. The slides will be a tremendous resource for you if you keep them and want to refer to them at some time. But we're going to be, you know, as we go through and as we have bills on different topics, my goal would be to try to give you enough background again, to refresh your memory and help us discuss issues, having the background right there. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Chun.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Randy Chun with House Research Programs, Healthcare Access and Prescription Drugs. Ms. Clarkvis and Ms. Sunderman will also be, you know, presenting, and perhaps just to streamline things, maybe I'll have them, they could introduce themselves as they, you know, present their segment of the publication. I'll also mention that document number 5 posted on the committee website lists the subject areas for all of us. What we'll be doing today is providing an overview of the major programs and agencies over which the Health Finance and Policy Committee has jurisdiction. And we're operating off, you know, document number 2, although Ms. Sunderman will be handling the slides for this presentation. So these major programs are the Medical Assistance and Minnesota Care programs that are administered by Department of Human Services, MinSure, which is the state health insurance exchange, the state occupational boards, and the Minnesota Department of Health, And this presentation won't cover programs that are under jurisdiction of the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee, such as long-term care and income maintenance. This will be a very general presentation. We're sort of gearing it toward members who are relatively new to the health and human services area and would be moving, you know, fairly quickly through the slides. If you need more detailed information about a program or agency function, feel free to contact us by email. We'd also be glad to meet individually with members, you know, one-on-one remotely to talk about some of these programs. And finally, the Health Research Department puts out a number of publications that describe many of these programs and agency functions, and these are all on the Health Research website. So we'll start first with a few charts that Mr. Berg, the fiscal analyst, has prepared that compare spending for the various programs. So this first chart shows the total of all funds spending, which is state and federal, for the agency and boards which that either this committee or the Human Services Finance Committee has jurisdiction. And this shows that the vast majority of spending, you know, it's tied to the Department of Human Services. And most of that within DHS is then healthcare. So this next slide, slide three, this shows state general fund expenditures for the Department of Human Services for the major program areas. And again, you can see that the vast majority of spending here is with the medical assistance program. The Minnesota Care Program, which will also be discussed, is paid out of the Healthcare Access Fund, so it doesn't show up on this slide. Slide four. So I'd like to start out by just talking a little bit about the various subsidized healthcare programs and how they relate to one another before focusing specifically on MA and Minnesota Care. So in Minnesota, persons with low to middle incomes can obtain subsidized coverage through one of three main programs. The first is MA, which is the state's Medicaid program. The second, Minnesota Care, which operates as a basic health program under the Affordable Care Act. And third, MinSure subsidies. These are premium tax credits and cost-sharing reductions to purchase private sector coverage through the state's health insurance exchange. And this presentation will focus on MA and Minnesota Care. There are slides on the MinSure subsidies, but I won't go over them, both to stay within our allotted time and also because these subsidies are governed mainly by federal law. So there's not much the legislature can do. Slide five. So these three programs provide a rough continuum of coverage for Minnesotans. The next bullet gives an example of the continuum of coverage for adults without children and parents and caretakers. So they are eligible for MA with incomes up to 133% of the federal poverty guidelines. And I'll just mention that the federal poverty guidelines are dollar amounts that increase with family size. They're updated annually by the federal government, and the DHS in turn updates these guidelines as well. There's also a separate attachment. Put out by Department of Human Services. So this is document number four. This provides the dollar amounts for various MA and Minnesota Care eligibility groups based on the federal poverty guidelines, you know, by family size. So next, adults without children, parents and caretakers would be eligible for Minnesota Care with incomes between 133 and 200% of the federal poverty guidelines. And then finally, MinSure tax credits for persons with incomes between 200 and 400% of the federal poverty guidelines. And covered services and enrollee costs will vary across the continuum. Slide six. So we'll start now with the medical assistance program. This is a jointly funded federal-state program that pays for healthcare services to low-income individuals. It's the state's Medicaid program, and the laws governing MA are found mainly in Chapter 256B of statute. Medicaid programs vary across the states. So each state adopts its own operating and administrative standards, but it has to remain within the broad parameters of federal law. Slide 7. This slide focuses on administration. So county agencies administer the MA program under the supervision of DHS. So they determine eligibility for persons who are elderly, blind, or have disabilities using MAXIS, which is the state's legacy system. The Minnesota Eligibility Technology System, or METS, is used by DHS and the counties to determine eligibility for families and children and adults without children. And this METS system, it's also the system used by MNsure, the insurance exchange, to determine eligibility for qualified health plans. Slide 8. The Department of Human Services uses two main systems to deliver services to MA enrollees. The first is the fee-for-service system, under which enrollees can see any MA enrolled provider. DHS reimburses these providers using fee schedules, and the reimbursement would be determined by the volume of services provided. The Department of Human Services also contracts with managed care and county-based purchasing plans. It provides these plans with a monthly capitation payment for each enrollee. This payment is fixed and doesn't vary with the amount of services that are provided to an enrollee. So under managed care, enrollees are normally limited to seeing providers within the plan network. Slide 9. So there are three main eligibility criteria for medical assistance. First, people must belong to an eligible group. Then they must meet income and any applicable asset limits. And finally, be a U.S. citizen or a legal non-citizen who meets certain criteria. The MA program also provides up to 3 months of retroactive coverage from the time of application if the person would have been eligible in those months. Turning to slide 10. So MA coverage is available for all major groups of individuals. These would be children, parents and caretakers, pregnant women, elderly, persons with disabilities, and adults without children. Now, adults without children have been, with incomes up to 133% of the poverty guidelines, have been covered since January 1st of 2014. This was done under the Affordable Care Act expansion option. So prior to this expansion, adults without children were covered only if they fell into some other eligibility group, such as being elderly or being a person with a disability. So extending coverage to this group essentially meant that, you know, all major groups of individuals now qualify for MA if they meet the program requirements. Slide 11. So the 2020 legislature chose to implement a federal option to make MA coverage available to uninsured individuals for testing and diagnosis of COVID-19. This coverage is limited to diagnostic products necessary to make a diagnosis of COVID-19 and any associated test. There are no income or asset requirements. Individuals must be Minnesota residents and U.S. citizens or otherwise lawfully present. And there's 100% federal match, and there are no co-payments or deductibles. And that means that the federal government pays for the full cost of the services provided to these individuals. The coverage applies for the duration of the federal public health emergency. And the federal government just this month renewed their declaration of a public health emergency. So it now extends through April 20th of 2021. Slide 12. This slide shows the income limits for the major groups of persons eligible for MA. And I won't, you know, really, you know, read out the slide. I'll just say that the variation in income limits across these different groups means that in the same household, you may have some members who are eligible for MA and other members who would not be eligible for MA. Perhaps they might be eligible for Minnesota Chair. Slide 13. This slide just goes over the income methodologies that are used. So in determining income eligibility, the MA program excludes or disregards various types of income. And there are two main types of methodologies used. The first is modified adjusted gross income. This is required under the Affordable Care Act to be used for parents, children, pregnant women, and adults without children. And Minnesota's existing income methodology, which is based on the Federal Supplemental Security Income Program, continues to be used for eligibility for the elderly, persons with disabilities, and certain other groups. Next slide. Persons who have incomes above the income limits can qualify by spending down. What this means is that they incur medical bills in amounts that are equal to or greater than the amount in which their income is in excess of the spend down limit. So there are two spend down limits. The first is 133% of poverty for families and children. The second is 81% of the poverty guidelines for the elderly, blind, and persons with disabilities. And this will increase to 100% of the federal poverty guidelines effective July 1st of 2022. There's no spend down option for adults without children. Slide 15. So some MA enrollees must meet asset standards. These would be parents and caretakers on a spend down, and also persons who are elderly, blind, or have disabilities, and the dollar amounts are listed in the slide. There is no asset limit for pregnant women, children, and parents and caretakers who are not on a spend down, and adults without children. And this is part of Affordable Care Act compliance. Next slide. So this slide describes covered services. The MA program covers all federally mandated and most optional healthcare services. And I'll just mention that under MA, optional services are often considered by most people to be essential or part of most healthcare coverage. For example, optional services under MA include dental care, mental health services, prescription drugs, you know, physical therapy, vision care, and other services. The MA benefit tends to be comprehensive compared to private sector coverage. The most significant difference is MA usually covers a wider range of long-term care services. And I'll refer to another handout or document that's posted on the website. This is document number 3. This is a document put out by DHS that describes covered services and cost sharing for medical assistance and Minnesota Care, and provides more detail. It lists the various covered services, for example. Next slide, please. So some MA enrollees are subject to cost sharing requirements. Cost sharing is required to be nominal for most enrollees. The MA program does not charge enrollee premiums, but certain services are subject to co-payments, and fee-for-service enrollees are subject to a family deductible. Again, I'll refer you to document number 3 for a list of these cost sharing requirements. Children, pregnant women, and certain American Indians and Alaska Natives are among the groups that are exempt from cost sharing. Next slide. So this covers the financing of MA. So MA is jointly financed by the federal government and the state government. The federal government provides a 50% match toward the cost of MA services, with the state general fund paying the remaining 50%. There's also a very small county share for certain specific services. And this federal match is varies across the different states, and it's tied to a measure of per capita income in the state. So Minnesota's match tends to be lower than, you know, a number of other states in the U.S., you know, because of our higher average per capita income. The Federal Children's Health Insurance Program provides an enhanced match of 65% toward the cost of certain services. And for newly eligible persons under the ACA Medicaid expansion, which in Minnesota care, I'm sorry, which in Minnesota was adults without children, there is a 90% federal match. Next slide. There are also some federal financing provisions related to COVID-19. The Federal Families First Coronavirus Response Act provides a 6.2 percentage point increase to each state's regular MA match. And this is effective through the last day of the calendar quarter in which the federal public health emergency ends. There's also a federal maintenance of effort requirement tied to a state receiving this funding. So this maintenance of effort requirement requires Minnesota to maintain eligibility standards and procedures that are not more restrictive than those that were in effect on January 1st of 2020. To maintain eligibility for persons who are enrolled in MA as of March 18th, 2020, and to provide coverage without cost sharing for the testing and treatment of COVID-19. Next slide. The next several slides focus on MA managed care. So majority of MA enrollees receive covered services through HMOs and community-based purchasing plans. And these are figures for the MA enrollment relative to the number of MA enrollees. These aren't from the same data source, so they're not directly comparable, but I think they do make the point that, again, a majority of people are enrolled in managed care. So families and children, adults without children and the elderly are required to enroll in managed care. Persons with disabilities may opt out of managed care and remain in fee-for-service. Next slide. So each managed care plan must provide or arrange for most MA covered services, including up to 180 days of nursing home care and also elderly waiver services. DHS pays each plan a capitation rate, and as mentioned, this is a fixed payment. Unlike fee-for-service, plan reimbursement does not increase as more services are provided. DHS withholds a portion of the capitation rate. Some of this withhold is returned pending meeting certain performance targets. And then the remaining withhold is returned in the next fiscal year. So this was done some years back as sort of a budget saving initiative. Each managed care plan determines its own provider network and also sets its own provider payment rates. So what this means is that sometimes the legislature and statute increases payment rates, say for, you know, dental providers. The money for this increase is reflected in the capitation rate paid to managed care plans, but DHS does not require that managed care plans pay dental providers at a certain payment level. So sometimes legislators will hear complaints from managed care providers that a certain rate increase might not have been passed on. Next slide. This describes sort of the way in which managed care services are procured. Since 2012, the state has used competitive bidding, beginning first in the metro area, and then in 2016, competitive bidding was extended statewide. The rates for persons who are elderly or have disabilities is not set through competitive bidding at this point. It's based on a negotiation based upon claims experience and other factors. So DHS has announced its plans for future plan procurement. In January of this month, it just issued an RFP to serve for managed care plans to serve families and children in the metro area beginning in plan year 2022. And then an RFP will be issued in October of 2021 to serve the elderly and persons with disabilities beginning in 2023. And then an RFP in January of 2022 would be issued to serve families and children in Greater Minnesota beginning in 2023. Next slide. I wanted to briefly mention a fairly large demonstration project that operates in both the fee-for-service and managed care delivery systems. This is the Integrated Health Partnership demonstration. This is a healthcare provider direct contracting program. So DHS contracts with healthcare provider groups called Integrated Health Partnerships to provide services to MA and Minnesota care enrollees. And it uses a value-based payment model. Under this model, all IHPs receive population-based payments for care coordination. And these payments are risk adjusted to take into account chronic conditions, health disparities, and other factors. And then the larger, more integrated IHPs are also paid under a risk gain sharing arrangement in which the IHP or the provider shares in savings and losses relative to a total cost estimate for a defined set of services for those enrollees who are attributed to this IHP. And I should mention here that this program from the enrollee standpoint operates kind of behind the scenes. An enrollee doesn't know whether a provider is part of an IHP or not, and they don't need to, you know, sign up or choose an IHP. They either choose a managed care plan or they remain in fee-for-service. So as of July of 2020, 25 IHPs provided services to 428,664 enrollees, both MA and Minnesota Care. Next slide. This just lists MA spending for fiscal year 2020. So total spending was $13.3 billion. And then it lists MA enrollment for that fiscal year, just over a million average monthly enrollees. Next slide. This slide breaks down MA enrollees by major eligibility group. The top blue line shows percentage of enrollment, and the green line is the percentage of total expenditures. And this slide just indicates that groups such as the elderly and persons with disabilities account or cost MA more on a per individual basis than the children and parents or adults without children. Madam Chair, that ends the MA portion. Did you want to take questions or should we just continue on and take questions at the end?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chanin. And again, I just would remind members, this is just a really quick overview, and there are some things here that we will dig into much more deeply. Mr. Chun, did you, I would entertain questions if people need clarification right now, but we do have an awful lot to get through. So, and Ms. Niedernhofer tells me there haven't been any questions. So why don't we charge ahead? If someone really has just needs clarification and it's a quick question, then please, let us know, raise your hand and the staff will communicate it to me. So, but let's just charge ahead if we can.
Okay. So Madam Chair, then we'll move on to the Minnesota Care Program. This again is a jointly funded federal state program to provide subsidized health coverage, mainly to parents and caretakers and adults without children. It was established in 1992 as part of broader healthcare access legislation. It's the laws governing the program are codified in Chapter 256L of Minnesota statutes. It's operated as a basic health program since January 1 of 2015. Next slide. So the Minnesota Care Program, it is administered by the state through the DHS central office. So there's less of a direct role for counties here. DHS contracts with managed care and county-based purchasing plans to provide services to enrollees. And the vast majority of Minnesota CARE enrollees are in managed care. The Minnesota Eligibility Technology System, or METS, is used to determine enrollee eligibility. Next slide. So in order to be eligible for Minnesota CARE, individuals need to meet income limits. There is no asset limit. They need to meet requirements related to lack of access to health insurance and not be MA eligible. They need to be Minnesota CARE residents and be either a citizen or a legal non-citizen. Next slide. So eligibility for the program is limited to persons with incomes greater than 133%, but not exceeding 200% of the federal poverty guidelines. And this is sort of tied to the federal Affordable Care Act requirements. There are certain exceptions to this income floor for certain groups of legal non-citizens. And the thinking here is that persons with incomes under 133% of the federal poverty guidelines may be eligible for MA coverage. And those with incomes greater than 200% of the poverty guidelines may receive subsidized coverage through insurer. I'm going to skip the next three slides, which provide sort of additional detailed information on eligibility, kind of also in the interest of time. So if we could move to slide 33. This is covered services. The MA program has several benefit sets. Pregnant women and children have access to the broadest range of services, nearly all MA benefit sets, whereas parents and adults without children are eligible for a less broad benefit set. And these benefits have to meet the ACA requirement that a basic health program provide at least the essential health benefits. And these are the essential health benefits are the 10 broad service care categories that the ACA has defined and requires qualified health plans offered through the exchange to provide. Again, I'll refer you to document number 3 posted online for a listing of the covered Minnesota CARE services. Next slide. So Minnesota CARE enrollees who are age 21 or older pay per person premiums based on a sliding scale, and then children are exempt. So these premiums range from $4 a month for persons at 35% of the federal poverty guidelines to $80 a month at the 200% of federal poverty guideline level. Persons with incomes below 35% of poverty pay no premiums. And also American Indians and Alaska Natives are exempt. Next slide. The Minnesota CARE program has various co-payment and co-insurance requirements. Pregnant women and children and American Indians and Alaska Natives are exempt. Once again, these co-insurance requirements are listed on document number 3 in more detail. Cost sharing was increased for this program effective July 1 of 2016. The Department of Human Services is required to adjust co-payments, co-insurance, and deductibles to maintain the actuarial value of the program at 94%. And actuarial value is the percentage of total average healthcare costs for a policy for covered benefits that is paid for by the insurance plan. Next slide. So as a basic health care program, the state receives from the federal government 95% of the value of premium tax credits and a portion of the value of cost sharing reductions that would otherwise have been provided through MinSure. The state share is funded by a 1.8% tax on the gross revenues of healthcare providers and a 1% tax on nonprofit health plan premiums. money from these taxes is deposited into the Healthcare Access Fund. And I should mention that the federal basic health program funding is deposited into the state's basic health program trust fund. So money in this trust fund can be used only to reduce premiums and cost sharing for basic health program enrollees and to provide additional benefits to basic health program enrollees. The 2019 legislature repealed a January 1, 2020 sunset for the provider tax, but it reduced the rate from 2.0% to the current 1.8%. Next slide. This lists spending and enrollment for fiscal year 2020 for Minnesota Care. So total spending is $452.6 million. The bulk of this is paid for through federal basic health program payments. And the average monthly enrollees, 77,832. So you can see as relative to the medical assistance program, Minnesota Care enrollment and spending is significantly lower. That concludes the Minnesota Care portion. I just have one more slide to go over. This is slide on page 38. This is the MinSure Health Insurance Exchange, which is an account in the budget of this committee. MinSure was established as a state-run exchange by the 2013 legislature, and laws governing MinSure are codified in Chapter 62B of statute. So the exchange assists individuals and families in selecting and purchasing healthcare coverage, also determines eligibility for premium tax credits and cost-sharing reductions. The exchange is designed to be a common entry point for individuals to apply for both private sector healthcare coverage and also coverage from MA and Minnesota Care. The next six slides describe the MinSure subsidies in more detail, but I'll be skipping those slides, as mentioned, both in interest of time, but also because the state does not have sort of, you know, direct authority over those. So we're now at slide 45. And this is where Ms. Sunderman will start presenting, unless there are, again, questions for what I've talked about.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chun. We appreciate that. And I know there, I haven't seen that there are any questions from members yet. And just in the, you know, usually when we're not in this virtual environment, I kind of stop the presentation at different points to sort of flag things that I think are potentially things we're going to be talking about. But I'm not going to do that right now, just in the interest of time and this environment that we're in. But let's get through the presentation. If members do have something that just isn't clear, like an acronym, or you're just not sure what something means, please do raise your hand. But thank you, Mr. Chun. So we'll, I do see a Representative Ryer has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's about this whole section in general. I think this is great data and great explanations, and I appreciate it. And it causes me to ask other questions about how do the enrollment and usage across these different programs look by different demographic groups, for example, racial, ethnic, cultural groups, and in particular. And then the other question is, can we also see information about outcomes? Because part of the great disparities we see are in the healthcare outcomes for those groups. I don't expect an answer to this today, by the way. I just wanted to get this on the table. So thank you.
Sure. Madam Chair, Ms. Ryer, what we could do would be I could work with Doug Berg, fiscal staff, and also talk with DHS staff to get some of this information to have it broken down by different groups and to see what information they have on outcomes.
Yeah, that would be very helpful. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chun. Thank you, Representative Ryer. This is really important. We want to keep talking about this because we know that in our state, health disparities are really huge, and we need to have that thought in front of us as we go through all of the things we're going to be talking about here. So I really appreciate you bringing that up. And just to flag that, I think that would be extremely helpful if we get that from DHS or if Mr. Chun can find that to give to the committee. And we'll send that out to everyone if we get a document that has more of that information on it. And then the whole issue about outcomes is one that we're going to also be talking about a lot this session. We have, some members are familiar with Results First, which is a database that we have. It lives in MMB. It deals with outcomes of various programs. And this is something that we're going to have a presentation on, and I hope that we will be talking a lot more about what data exists to really tell us what works and what doesn't work, and really try to get to the bottom of the disparities that exist. So thank you so much, Representative Ryer. So we could go on, and Ms. Sunderman, welcome, and please give us a little introduction of yourself. That's who's talking next, right, Ms. Sunderman?
Yes, Madam Chair and members. I'm Sarah Sunderman from House Research. For the purposes of this committee, I'll be covering health-related licensing boards and regulation of those professionals. Otherwise, I cover human services issues, and I'll be also staffing the Behavioral Health Division. So this slide 45, goes over the basics of health-related licensing board and health professional regulation. Minnesota statutes in Chapter 214 provide that no occupation may be regulated by the state unless its regulation is required for the safety and well-being of Minnesotans. And I'm not sure if the chair will be sort of requiring or suggesting. There's a framework that has been published that a lot of health professions have used in the past. To sort of justify regulation or a change in their scope of practice. Health-related occupations in Minnesota are regulated either by Minnesota Department of Health or by one of the currently 17 health-related licensing boards. And in total, between these two, the state regulates at least 56 health-related occupations. Some health-related licensing boards regulate a single occupation, while others, like the Board of Medical Practice, regulate a range of occupations that are sort of related to the practice of medicine, but are separate. And there is, on the House Research website, a publication that goes into health-related professional regulation in some more detail. And this slide just lists the health-related licensing boards. And as you see, most of them regulate one sort of distinct profession, but then many, there are many under the Board of Medical Practice. And the next slide, this gives you an idea of the occupations that MDH regulates, and Ms. Clarkvist will be going into this in further detail later on in the presentation. So unless there are any questions, I will hand it off to Ms. Clarkvist to talk about the health department.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Sunderman. And let me just comment right now before we go on to the next presentation or the next portion. So we will, members who've been here before know that health licensing and scope of practice bills can be very contentious and can take up a lot of time. And it will be my intention to put those over into the second year of the biennium. So just letting everyone know that we will indeed have a process for those when we get to that point. But because this is the budget year and setting up the budget is going to be our primary challenge, and we have so many other things on our plate, if you have a licensing or scope of practice bill, likely we won't hear it until next year. But please do talk to me about it if that's the case, because, you know, if something is urgent for some reason, we may make an exception. But just want to put that out there for members and for the public. So thank you. We can go on.
So Madam Chair and members, I'm Elizabeth Clarkvist with House Research, and I'll be finishing the rest of the presentation. I cover health department programs and public health programs. And I've been with House Research for 12 years, and I also spent 3 years in the revisor's office. So starting with slide 48, this shows the Department of Health combined budget for fiscal years 22 and 23. And the main thing to note about this slide is about 45% of the health department's budget is federal funds, and the remainder of the department's budget is state funds from a range of sources. Moving on to slide 49, I'll be talking about health department programs and activities in kind of three broad categories: public health, healthcare regulation, and healthcare reform. And slide 50 describes public health a little bit more. These are activities to protect and promote the health of people and communities by preventing people from becoming sick or injured, promoting wellness, tracking disease outbreaks, educating people about health risks, and compiling health statistics. Moving on to slide 51. This is a good place to start with talking about public health. Minnesota's public health system is a partnership between the health department, local public health agencies, which are called community health boards, tribal governments, and other organizations. And the health department is the state's lead public health agency, and the commissioner of health is responsible for maintaining that organized system. Community health boards, which you see on the map, you should see the jurisdiction of the 51 community health boards in the state. They can cover a single county, multiple counties, a city, or a city and county combined, or the area of a human services board. Moving on to slide 52, a wide variety of programs fall under the broad jurisdiction of public health. And this slide kind of gives you an example of the variety. In each of these subject areas, I'll just mention a few programs and topics to help illustrate the types of issues that this committee might consider. So starting with environmental health programs, these programs might include things that are related to regulation and protection of indoor air quality, monitoring blood lead levels in children and lead abatement programs, asbestos abatement, and licensing for radon mitigation. It also includes drinking water protection activities and well management programs, regulation of food, beverage, and lodging establishments and swimming pools, and enforcement of the food code. And one thing to note about the food code is that the health department shares responsibility for food safety oversight with the Department of Agriculture. Environmental health programs also includes radiation safety, monitoring for radiation around nuclear power plants, licensing and enforcement for radioactive materials, and regulation of X-ray equipment used in health facilities. Now moving on to slide 54, I'll talk a little about infectious disease epidemiology prevention and control programs. This program monitors the occurrence of infectious diseases and develops and implements strategies for preventing and controlling diseases. And these activities include things like collecting reports on and investigating disease outbreaks, providing immunization information and statistics, and adopting immunization requirements for certain populations, and providing STD, HIV, and tuberculosis statistics and reports, conducting prevention activities, and conducting disease investigations to ensure that adequate therapy is being provided for these populations. The Commissioner of Health also has responsibility for the Public Health Response Contingency Account and the Healthcare Response Fund. And these are two funds in which the money that's in the fund in these accounts or funds are appropriated to the Commissioner of Health for specific public health response activities. Slide 55 talks about activities of the public health laboratory at the health department. These activities include analyzing environmental samples to detect public health hazards, testing human specimens to detect disease outbreaks and to identify trends in infectious diseases, collaborating with hospitals and clinics to provide specialized testing, and operating the newborn screening program, which tests newborns for 61 rare disorders and also provides hearing and heart function testing to newborns. Slide 56 describes some COVID-19 response activities of the health department. The department has played a large role in the state's COVID-19 response, and some of these activities include contracting for the establishment of testing sites around the state, supporting testing in long-term care facilities, establishing priorities for testing and providing guidance on specimen collection, collecting and reporting data on COVID-19 cases, deaths, completed tests, hospitalizations, and case demographics, performing some contact tracing activities. The department has developed guidance on vaccine allocation and on registering and training vaccine providers. The department's educating the public and specific communities and populations about COVID-19 and has issued contracts for community outreach services to connect people with services. The department's provided guidance documents for the public for specific settings and occupations and to implement specific executive orders. The department has also issued contracts for activities in long-term care facilities, such as a nurse triage line, technical assistance to prevent transmission, and infection control strike teams. And finally, the department has made temporary changes to a number of its programs as needed to allow them to continue to function during the pandemic. Slide 57 briefly describes some activities in the child and family health area. These include administering grant programs to decrease teen pregnancy rates, administering the family planning grants programs and the positive alternative grants program. The department administers two food support programs, WIC and the commodity supplemental food program. These are both federal programs. Distribution of federal maternal and child health block grant funds to community health boards for programs serving families and individuals who are at high risk or low income. The department's Children and Youth with Special Health Needs program is a set of programs to serve children with special needs in their families. And it provides things like education, linking families with services, and monitoring and data analysis. Also, this area administers home visiting programs in which both federal and state funds are distributed as grants to local home visiting programs. And the department also provides consultation services, technical support and training, and collects data on program activities and performance. Moving on to slide 58, there are a variety of programs in the health promotion area aimed at preventing or reducing the prevalence of chronic diseases, including programs on asthma, cardiovascular health, type 2 diabetes, and oral health. Cancer control programs, including the Minnesota Cancer Reporting System and the SAGE screening program, which provides screening for breast and cervical cancer. Programs in the community health area include emergency preparedness and response, in which the department coordinates preparedness activities and works with local health partners and organizations to plan for, respond to, and recover from public health emergencies. The Office of Statewide Health Improvement Initiatives operates the SHIP program, which is a program to support local wellness programs in communities, schools, and work sites. And finally, the Center for Health Equity was established in 2013 in the department to promote health equity, and its activities include collecting data on health and health disparities among populations in the state and distributing grants to eliminate health disparities. One of the health department's functions related to records and data is operating the state's Office of Vital Records. This office maintains a statewide system of vital records, including records on births, deaths, and marriages. And statutory requirements exist for who must file vital records, when and how they must be filed, and how vital records may be amended. Next, I'll briefly discuss the department's healthcare regulation activities. And slide 61 lists some occupations, some health occupations that are regulated by the health department. The department regulates these occupations by licensure, registration, certification, or by maintaining a registry of members of these occupations. And the department investigates complaints and conducts enforcement activities when appropriate and enforces consumer protection laws. In some cases, the department also regulates the locations where these occupations provide services, such as funeral establishments or swimming pools. In addition to health occupations, the health department also regulates health facilities. This includes licensing or registering facilities like hospitals, nursing homes, and boarding care homes. The department investigates complaints and enforces maltreatment laws in these facilities and initiates enforcement activities. The department also surveys nursing homes under a cooperative agreement with CMS. The department administers the Essential Community Provider Designation Program. And this is a provider that serves high-risk, special needs, and underserved communities. And to become an essential community provider, the provider must meet requirements in statute or rule. And health insurers are required to offer contracts to all ECPs in their service areas. Slide 63 describes licensure of assisted living facilities, which will go into effect August 1st of 2021. And under the new licensure system, there will be two facility categories for licensure, and the facility will be responsible for all housing and service related matters and will obtain a single license to provide both housing and services. Slide 64. Recognizes the health department's authority related to regulation of health carriers. The department licenses health maintenance organizations and reviews their coverage and benefits and conducts quality assurance reviews. This is an area that the department shares with the Department of Commerce. The department also regulates county-based purchasing organizations, and it reviews provider network adequacy of HMOs and of the health carriers that are regulated by Commerce. And this involves communicating provider network adequacy standards to carriers, reviewing network filings submitted by carriers, and reviewing networks when provider contracts are terminated to ensure that network adequacy is maintained. Slide 65 describes the state's medical cannabis program, which is administered by the health department. The health department registered two manufacturers of medical cannabis, and these manufacturers began supplying medical cannabis to patients in the state in 2015. Slide 66 lists the qualifying medical conditions for the medical cannabis program. To obtain medical cannabis in the state, a patient must be certified by a healthcare practitioner as having one of these qualifying medical conditions. Some of these are in statute, and the Commissioner of Health has added some of them under her authority. And the final area that I'll be discussing today are the department's healthcare reform activities, and these are initiatives to improve patient care, improve population health, and reduce healthcare costs. Slide 68 includes some workforce development programs, and these are programs to try to ensure that there are healthcare providers available in all areas of the state. And these might include loan forgiveness programs, clinical or residency training grant programs, the medical education and research costs program, the home and community-based services employee scholarship program, and the International Medical Graduates Assistance Program. The Health Department also oversees some programs and initiatives to improve access and efficiency using technology. And regarding electronic health records, the commissioner must maintain standards that are used by electronic health record systems for sharing data across systems. Regarding electronic prescription drugs, all electronic prescription drugs and prior authorization requests are required to be transmitted electronically. And the Health Department also established a set of standards for the Health Information Exchange Program. Initiatives to ensure value in healthcare spending, the Health Department certifies healthcare homes. These are clinics that are certified and provide coordination of primary care and other services for patients with complex or chronic conditions. The Health Department administers the statewide quality reporting and measurement system, which is called SQRMS. And the Health Department establishes a standardized set of quality measures for this program, and all physician clinics and hospitals report on these quality measures. And then the department contracts with an organization called Minnesota Community Measurement for data collection, measurement development, and maintenance, and other functions. And then my final slide that I'll talk about briefly is the All Payer Claims Database. This is a database of healthcare claims data on Minnesota residents. Data is submitted by health plan companies, third-party administrators, and pharmacy benefit managers that cover Minnesota residents. They submit a specified set of data in a de-identified format, and the allowable uses of the data are specified in statute. And finally, slide 72 includes the email addresses of the House research analysts in the HHS area. And I'd encourage you again to please contact any of us if you have any questions or want to discuss any of the things we've talked about today in greater detail. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Ms. Clarkvist and Mr. Chan and Ms. Sunderman. This is really, really helpful, great, lot of information here. So I just wanted to make one comment, which is it would probably be really helpful for members to take a look at the websites of the Department of Health and the Department of Human Services and just spend a little time looking around in there. One thing that I think it's easy to draw from this presentation we just heard is how much these organizations are doing. And especially when we think about the Department of Health and now with COVID and the COVID response, the Department of Health is actually a pretty small agency, especially compared to the Department of Human Services. And I was recently told that 70% of the personnel in the Department of Health has been moved into COVID response in some form. So we need to kind of be aware that a lot of the functions, the many very important functions of the Department of Health are, you know, they are stretched right now. So anyway, I didn't see that there were any specific questions, but believe me, there will be plenty of time for those. And tomorrow we will be having our hearing at 3 o'clock. So I just wanted everyone to note that it's not the same time each of the 3 days. So it'll be 3 to 4:30 tomorrow. We will be hearing from the commissioners of the Department of Health, Commissioner Janel, and the Commissioner of Human Services, Commissioner Jody Harpstead. So there'll be some opportunity for questions there. And thank you everyone for your attendance today and for your attention. And I will see you all tomorrow. Bye now.